A tiny house village for the homeless opened in Madison last week. We will talk about how this came about and how it will help the homeless, but also about what else is needed to help homeless people in Wisconsin. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, November 24th. Last week's unusually bitter cold snap for November was tough for most of us to handle. Imagine what it was like for someone who doesn't have a home. Today's winter weather advisories and storm warnings in parts of Wisconsin will also mean several inches of snow before the day is done. How will Wisconsin's homeless find shelter from the storm? We will talk with an advocate for the homeless about the challenges they face, what is needed, and what we can do to help. And we welcome your questions and your thoughts at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Brenda Conkle, Executive Director of the Tenant Resource Center in Madison, Wisconsin, and an advocate for the homeless in Dane County. She blogs at forwardlookout.com. Good morning.
Good morning.
So how big a problem is homelessness in Madison and Dane County?
You know, it varies a lot from community to community, but we know here in Madison that we have about 600 chronically homeless men and a little bit under 100 chronically homeless women who are out on our streets, except for days when they can get into shelter. And a lot of people here in Madison, they can get into shelter 60 days a year, and then the rest of the year they have to find another place to be.
Why is that?
That's just the shelter rules here. Again, those can vary from community to community, but our shelter says unless it's 20 degrees or less, then they'll let everybody into shelter. But if it's more than 20 degrees outside, then people only get 60 days a year.
Yeah. Well, when you
and the women here also have, they have only 30 women can get into shelter. So in the summertime, if there's more than 30 women, the rest of them get turned away and they have to do a lottery.
Just because of the size of the shelter?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, when you say that there are 600 chronically homeless men and 100 chronically homeless women, what exactly does that mean by chronically?
Yeah, that's a HUD definition. They make us do you know, various counts and count the homeless people in various sorts of ways. But basically it means that they have some sort of a disability. They've been homeless either 3 times, it's like a definition that's like a 3 times in the last 5 years, you know. So.
Yeah, and those numbers fluctuate because I take it there would be people on who are homeless who may not be chronically homeless, but because of losing a job or some financial, you know, that they're first time homeless.
Yeah, and it's difficult to count homeless people. You have to find them.
Yeah.
HUD makes people do a point-in-time count twice a year in January and July. And so people go out on the streets and try to find people where they're sleeping and then do a physical count, plus then they count everybody in the shelters. So most communities do that if they get any type of HUD funding. But, you know, how accurate those counts are, difficult to tell.
Right. And I know you're an expert for Dane County and Madison, but can you give us an idea about the rest of the state?
Sure. There's been a little bit of an increase. I saw the numbers a month or two ago, and there's been a slight increase. Madison-Milwaukee numbers are always a little bit different, and the increases there are a little bit more. I think the thing that I've been seeing mostly is that it seems like there's a higher number of people who are older who just haven't been able to get back into the job market. And, you know, after a while, just kind of run out of options.
Yeah. And we do think of this homelessness as an urban problem. Does homelessness also occur in rural areas?
Yes, most definitely. And I'm always surprised. So, you know, HUD has one way of counting the homeless, and the schools actually have another way of counting the homeless. But it's pretty hard to find a school district that doesn't have homeless children in it.
Yeah. Well, so who are the homeless? You mentioned men and women, but do we have families on the street, children?
Yeah, the families, at least here in Dane County, and I think throughout most of the rest of the state, tend to get into the services a little bit easier, usually because I do have children and people are worried about the kids. And so it seems that oftentimes there's more services available to them, or the services might be a little bit more generous with the limits that they have. Mm-hmm. But definitely, like I said, every single school district in Wisconsin probably has homeless kids in it. And again, kids don't really want to tell their teachers or their schools that they're homeless, but definitely they're out there. And it's a much higher number than you would expect, and it is in rural areas. I know in Dane County here, the rural areas are always saying, you always hear about homeless in Madison, but it's everywhere. And, you know, they have people living in their vans, they have people, you know, doubling up with people, staying on people's couches and other things.
Yeah. In your experience, what are the main causes of homelessness in Wisconsin?
You know, like I said, a lot of it is, I think, the economy. You know, there are some issues, but like we have kind of had a few years ago, like the perfect storm. A lot of people were getting foreclosed on. The banks weren't lending to developers to create more rental housing. People weren't able to get into ownership because the banks are a little bit stricter on their loans. And it seems like rental housing really became more and more scarce. And so it's difficult to find housing. So that's definitely one of the issues. But then the economy and jobs, and like I said, people over 50 trying to get into the job market, sometimes that's just very difficult. And then there are always the issues of mental illness and alcoholism, but I think those are probably far less than what people think of. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a stereotype, but I think a lot of people really don't even have those types of issues, but they still end up homeless.
Yeah. Well, we did see in the news last week that Occupy Madison celebrated the opening of this new tiny house village on Madison's east side to provide homes, tiny homes, for the homeless. Tell us how this came about.
Well, Occupy Madison had, when the Occupy movement kind of started, like many of the communities throughout the nation, they started an encampment, and they were, you know, camping in various places, protesting. And over, they ended up on East Washington eventually, and over the winter, a lot of the activists started going home. It got cold, and a lot of the homeless people started moving in. And at one point, up to 80 to 100 people were camping with Occupy Madison. And then the city shut that down the following spring. And because of that, people had no place to go. That's when the shelters sort of started being less lenient because it was more than 20 degrees. And we tried to find solutions for people to have some sort of a legal place to sleep. There isn't a lot of legal places to sleep. Most cities don't allow you to sleep in parks. They don't allow you to sleep on the street. And so people are getting tickets all the time and just don't have a legal place to sleep. So we sort of got chased all around. We set up camps and campgrounds and camped on the front lawn of the Human Services building. And really, we even camped on people's private property, and that was illegal too. So eventually we just came across this idea of having tiny homes on wheels that we could park on the street because we knew that would be legal. So about a year and a half ago, we started building tiny homes. And the first couple has been living in the house for almost a year now. And they finally got to move their house off of the street where they had to move it every 24 or 48 hours and move it into a tiny house village that we were able to purchase an old gas station here in Madison. And then we renovated it all. We'll have a workshop and some gardens and a store where they can sell goods that they make. And then 9 tiny houses will be able to be parked there.
So how many people, because it said that only 4 people, 2 of them a couple, will be living in the village at first this winter.
Yeah, right. There's we just completed phase 1. So phase 1 allows 3 houses to be parked there, and there's 1 couple and 2 individuals that will be our first residents there. We have to build, in phase 2, we have to build a kitchen and a community room, and then finish some of the landscaping outside, and then we'll be able to add the additional houses.
Well, we'll talk more about how this tiny village helps the homeless in Madison. And we'll talk more about what else is needed to help the homeless, not just in Madison, but statewide. And we would like to know your experiences. What experience do you have with homelessness in your community? Is it visible? Have you yourself ever been homeless? What do you think ought to be done to help the homeless, to address this issue? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about the problem of homelessness in Wisconsin and what is happening to help the homeless in Madison and in other parts of the state. And we're welcoming your questions and your thoughts for our guest. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Brenda Conkle, Executive Director of the Tenant Resource Center in Madison. She's an advocate for the homeless in Dane County. She blogs at forwardlookout.com. And we have John in Madison joining us first. Hello, John.
Good morning. I'm familiar with homelessness on a national scale, and I was just wondering on a few of the national parameters how Wisconsin stacks up. For example, mortality for the homeless is four times what it is for the person who isn't homeless, and I wonder how Wisconsin ranks in that status. Also, the minority representation of Native Americans, African Americans, and Latinos is much higher compared to their proportion of the population. I wonder how that stacks up in Wisconsin. And also, and this really bothers me, 40% of the homeless have some kind of mental illness. And half of those, one in five, has a serious mental illness. And I just wondered how that stacks up in Wisconsin stats.
Thank you, John. Brenda, can you address those?
Sure. For the mortality rate, I don't think we have good numbers on those here. And that very much concerns me because that's something that, like I said, a lot of our homeless are older, they have chronic medical conditions, and they're not getting the medical attention that they need. So that is a very severe problem. And I know that people who are homeless, their mortality rate is always much higher than people who have homes. So I don't have any good numbers on those. As far as race, definitely is very disturbing. They talk about equity in Madison a lot, but they never talk about equity in the homeless shelters. And I think about 80% of the people are people of color. And that, you know, given that our population is more like 12% people of color, that's a pretty staggering number. And then I forgot what the third question was there. But
mental illness that has.
Mental illness. Yeah. I would say that the 40% number that he quoted is probably about on par. And one of the bigger problems that we have here is that it's so difficult to access mental health services, that they're often set up in ways that make it difficult. But if you have a mental illness, it's hard for you to be successful even getting an appointment, or it's hard to be successful even, you know, making it through the first couple of appointments in order to be able to get into those services. So I would say the 40% number is pretty accurate.
You know, there's a story out of Milwaukee within the last week, and just heartbreaking. He was an older gentleman, homeless man in Milwaukee, who was known to have schizophrenia, and he was found in an abandoned home in a closet, I think frozen to death. I mean, hypothermia, I'm not sure. An autopsy was, at least the results haven't necessarily been released on that. And, I mean, it is heartbreaking. You can die if you don't have a home.
Yeah, definitely. And I know Madison River Ministry here in Madison does the longest day march here in Madison to remember all the people who have died throughout the past year. And there's always about, you know, 10 to a dozen people who are homeless who who died during the year, and often you don't hear the stories about the people who died. It's just, you know, somebody nobody knew that, you know, passed away, and it doesn't even make the paper or anything. So definitely that is a serious issue. We luckily don't have a lot of people freezing to death, but I think that's in due in large part to a group of individuals who go out and try to find people where they are at and make sure that their needs are getting met.
Yeah.
And groups like Feeding the State Street Family, they're all grassroots groups. They're not paid for by any government funding or anything. It's just volunteers who are doing it with the help of a lot of churches.
Tell us about that effort. What did you? I missed the name of that.
There's a group called Feeding the State Street Family. And generally speaking, what they do is they go out, they do outreach a couple times a week, and they provide people with tents and sleeping bags and heaters and propane and other things to be able to make sure that people survive the winter. There's another group called Stone Soup that goes out and actually feeds people on the street a couple times a week. So grassroots groups are going out, checking in with people, making sure that if they need to get to the hospital or if they need to medical services of any kind, that they try to get them connected to them.
Yeah, I actually was a part of a local business that was taking donations for the State Street family, and they cited statistics that said that Madison and Dane County had like the highest rate of homeless youth in Wisconsin. Anyway, is that a bigger problem here than elsewhere?
I think that it is. Part of it is that, you know, youth, when there's no place to go in Wisconsin, they think of Madison and they come here. So I think that's part of the problem. But then also we have a youth shelter that hasn't opened yet. So for youth, staying in the shelters if you're under 18 isn't always an option. And so there isn't a lot of places for people to go. And so a lot of times they don't get the services that other groups do. Briar Patch does some really good street outreach, but there's just not a lot of services available to the kids.
We are talking with Brenda Conkle, Executive Director of the Tenant Resource Center in Madison and advocate for the homeless. And we are welcoming your questions for her. We're welcoming any thoughts or experience that you might have with homelessness, the homeless in your community. Perhaps you yourself have been homeless. Maybe you know someone who is. So what do we need to do to help the homeless? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Mary on Facebook says, I never understood why there are so many homeless in a land of empty houses. What can you say about that, Brenda?
Yeah, that's a question that gets asked a lot. It depends upon your community, but some communities do have actually empty houses and others have a few less. It depends a lot on the market. But it is very frustrating to drive by empty boarded up buildings that have been foreclosed on by the banks and then to know that people are out there without houses. I know that some communities throughout the United States have tried like taking over those houses. Usually that ends up with the police coming in and removing people from the houses on behalf of the banks. So it's not something that's easily done, but it has been done in some communities. I think that's sort of what led us to build the tiny houses, because people don't need a lot of space. They don't need a lot of amenities, but just having that roof and having insulation and having a warm, safe place to be at night is so important, where you can lock your doors and know that you're going to be safe and someone's not going to come along and kick you in the head or worse. So,
yeah. Well, back to the tiny house village, as we mentioned before news, four people, two of them a couple, will be living in the village this winter. Another six homes are planned for the spring. But that's still pretty small scale, isn't it?
Oh, it definitely is. It's a very small piece. I think we started small. We're 100% funded by the community, and we're a 100% volunteer organization. So we started building the houses a year and a half ago. There's almost five of them built already. The La Follette High School has built two of them. And we've spent the majority of our time working on getting our property ready. We're hoping to expand and buy another piece of property nearby. But the people who are living in the tiny houses, they actually help build the houses themselves. And then they live in a cooperative kind of eco-village community and continue to give back and build products that we can sell so we can pay the utilities.
How unique is this? Are there other tiny house villages for the homeless elsewhere? Could it be replicated in other communities in Wisconsin, for example?
Oh, definitely. Before we started this, we went and visited three different villages out west. So we went to Dignity Village in Portland, Opportunity Village in Eugene, and then Coyote Village in Olympia, Washington. They each have sort of different models and that, you know, a little bit different, but ours is definitely the smallest one. Most of the camps had, communities had between 30 and 60 people in them. And I know in Austin, Texas, there's one called Community First, and they're building SC200 houses. Two of them actually have HUD funding, and so if they're sort of done on a much bigger scale, that's the Coyote Village, and I think the Community First one in Austin has millions of dollars being put into it. Ours so far has cost maybe $250,000. So ours is a much smaller scale, but it is something that was doable here in our community, and we're hoping to continue to expand.
Yeah. Well, what do you think is the solution for individual homeless people? I guess if they're not going to be in the tiny house village this winter, what sort of support do they need to get back on their feet?
Well, I think it varies again because there's no one single homeless person, but I do think that case management services that are appropriate to people who may have special needs is really what seems to be missing in our community. I think when people are homeless, we sort of shelter them, we feed them, and then we forget about the rest of the human being. When you've been homeless for a long time and you've gone without sleep and you are constantly getting pushed around and it's so difficult, here in Madison, to you get up in the morning, you got to be out of some of the shelters by 5:30 or 6 in the morning. You got to go someplace, find breakfast, and then you got to go do your laundry, and then you got to go take a shower, and then you got to go eat lunch. And then, by the time you run all around the city trying to get just your basic needs met, you're just exhausted by 5 o'clock when they let you back into shelter. So to me, I think there needs to be comprehensive services that are all located in one place with people there who can build relationships, talk to people, and figure out on an individual basis what folks need. Some people, it is just seriously medical issues and just finding support to continue dealing with whatever medical issues they have. But other people, it is helping with the resume, helping getting ID because they lost it, helping do a lot of simple things that anyone in the community can do. And I think the biggest thing is just, remembering that these are human beings and saying hello on the street when you see them and not being afraid. Yeah. And treating people with dignity and respect, because I think a lot of times people just lose a lot of hope because they're not, they feel like nobody cares about them.
Let's go to Laura in Madison. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I'm currently living at the YWCA in Madison. I was homeless before I got into the current situation, the living situation. So I've had some experience. I see a lot of meddling in what cities have been trying to do to mitigate people becoming homeless. I see the Wisconsin Realtors and other lobbying groups pushing state legislators to override laws that cities like Madison and Milwaukee have put into effect. I think this is one thing that we can do, is to get the state out of what I think are local affairs.
Yeah, what do you mean, Laura, by state meddling in a local affair, for example?
So the state has overturned, if you will, has overridden many of the local laws regarding tenants' rights issues in the state. And tenants' rights, of course, that's how people become homeless, is because of tenant-landlord disputes and things like that.
Well, we'll certainly get Brenda to react to that. But, Laura, so now the YWCA is your home.
Yeah, for now. I have to tell you, I'm currently in a much better place, situation as far as work goes. I lived in my old, the house that I lived in for over 25 years. And it was because of the downturn in the economy and the inability to find work that I got into the situation that I was in. And now it's hard to get to rent another place because landlords keep saying, well, you were evicted from your last residence. But they don't look at the 25 years of timely payments that I made. It's a very difficult situation.
Boy, I'm sorry. A Brenda reaction?
Well, Laura's absolutely right, and her story is kind of a common one. There were three different laws that the state legislature passed, and it took away a lot of rights of local municipalities. So now landlords can discriminate against arrest and conviction records. They can charge more than a month's rent for security deposit. Statewide, they've sped up the eviction process so that landlords can evict people faster. They can throw your things out on the street if they've written the correct thing into the leases. Like, they really did do the wholesale across the board changes to tenant landlord law, which now has landlords and tenants throughout the state completely confused, and is making it extremely difficult for tenants. And as I was explaining, if you have an eviction on your record, because of the very low vacancy rate here in Madison, landlords, sometimes you're getting 40 applications for one apartment, and they just move on to the next person because why rent to somebody who's been evicted if they can find somebody who hasn't?
Yeah. You were recently in the news in Madison because you were told to stop letting homeless people sleep on your porch or risk some steep fines. You responded that there's nowhere that it's legal for people to sleep outside. Do you think that should change?
Oh, absolutely. I guess I was a little shocked that they told me we have lockers on our porch so that people can store their things during the day so they don't have to carry them all around with them. And again, like I said, it's just difficult being homeless. If you got to carry your sleeping bag, your backpack, and everything that you own with you around the city, that makes it extra hard to get anything done. So we have lockers on our porch, and then we are also allowing people to sleep there at night if they couldn't find another place to sleep at night because they knew it was safe. And if they had to, they could ring our doorbell, and we could come out and find out what the problem was. The city... we've been doing it for about 2 years, and our next-door neighbor who was selling his house complained to the city, and so they had to sort of write us up, and we had to make people stop sleeping on our porch as of November 1st, and then as of December 1st, you have to remove the lockers.
We will check news, and then we'll continue talking about Wisconsin's homeless. Brenda Conkle is our guest, Executive Director of the Tenant Resource Center in Madison and advocate for the homeless in Dane County. We are welcoming your questions and thoughts on what we can do to help homeless individuals and families in Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, the onset of winter weather in Wisconsin is hard enough when you have a place to live, but what about when you don't? Some homeless residents of Madison now have a new housing option following the opening of a tiny house village on the city's east side. But what else is needed? We are talking to an advocate for the homeless about what is needed and welcoming your questions and your thoughts at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Brenda Conkel, Executive Director of the Tenant Resource Center in Madison. She blogs at forwardlookout.com. So, Brenda, who or what is responsible for reducing homelessness? What should government be doing?
Well, you know, HUD has been really placing a strong preference to just getting people immediately into housing. They call it housing first. And I think it probably is absolutely the best model. Sometimes we tend to focus on people and what kind of problems they have. And somehow we have this idea that because they drink or because they have a mental illness or because they're not working, somehow they should be homeless. And that doesn't make any sense. Housing first model really just gets people into housing and then has people start to deal with whatever problems or issues they might have in their lives. So it's a way to, you know, it's so much easier if you have a place to live, you have an address, you have a phone to be able to find a job. And so HUD has really been pushing for these housing first programs, get people into housing and then work with them to help them do whatever it is they need to do in their lives. And that makes so much sense, but we've sort of been doing it backwards for the past 20 years. And so I do think that that's a really great model. It's also an expensive model. You know, you gotta get people into housing, but there's numbers nationwide that say that it costs $40,000 a year for someone who's homeless. Between, you know, emergency services, going to the hospital, and the other programs that are needed to help basically keep people homeless. So putting people into housing actually can end up being a cheaper model than having people be homeless.
Yeah. On your blog, you write extensively about problems with the shelter system in Madison. What are the issues that you see?
Well, I do think... Well, number one, there's no place to go during the day. So having a day center, some place where people can, you know, use a computer, use a phone, get a shower, do their laundry, get something to eat, you know, have an address, all of those things that people who have homes have is, I think, very critical. And again, if people are running around the city trying to do all kinds of things, that makes it very difficult. And it has to be someplace that's located where people can actually get to. Bus tickets are very hard for homeless people to get a hold of, and so they do a lot of walking. And if you've got sores on your feet or if you have other medical conditions, it just makes it very hard. But then the other thing that I think is really necessary is actually looking at our shelter policies and trying to figure out how to make sure that people can actually get into the shelter. We've had people have been permanently banned from the shelters, and if you're permanently banned, you can't go back. What do you do? And so, you know, that's one thing that I know they're taking a look at. And if people, you know, the shelters are getting a little bit more lenient and letting people back in who had been permanently banned, but that's been really hard for some people.
Are they banned because of, drug use or theft or what? Why are they banned?
You know, it usually varies, but it maybe somebody shoved somebody, maybe they yelled at the staff member. You know, it can vary. Yeah. Maybe they've been drunk one too many times, whatever. Yeah. But they still need a place to sleep when it's negative 40 degrees outside.
Right. So, just as an example, I can run into men who I believe are homeless at dark 30 in the morning when I walk to work. And some of them are in the university building where I park from time to time. And there is a nearby homeless shelter. And I'm thinking, I wonder why they're not there. And they could be banned. Is that what's going on there? Or why aren't they there?
It could be. Or it could be that, you know, they have the men have 60 days in shelter. It starts on November 1st. And then their 60 days goes throughout the year. So unless it's 20 degrees or less, they can't get into shelters if they've used up their 60 days. So people are always nervous about using up their days if, you know, it's going to rain for a week straight, or if, you know, it's, you know, 25 degrees out but snowing every night. And so people are kind of conservative with their days. And if it feels like it's a good night to stay out, or if they, you know, were in shelter the night before, maybe they'll stay out for a night and go back to shelter the next night. So they're sort of like managing their days and trying to figure out how to make sure that when it's the worst kind of weather or when they need to get into shelter, they're able to do that.
It's just sad. I mean, you mentioned a little bit earlier in the program, and I didn't even realize this, that the shelters will say, hey, time to get out of here at 6 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And that's just... why does it have to be that early, number one? But also, it's just a place to sleep. That's it.
Yeah. There's three different, for men, there's three different churches that they're basically in church basements. And so depending upon when the churches need people out of there for their, to open for the day for their other programs to start, depends on when people have to be out of the shelter in the morning. So at Men's Shelter 1, that's where they actually have breakfast. They can stay till 7. But at Men's Shelter 2, they have to get up at 5:30 and leave. So it's because, you know, there's programs coming in for the day, and they need to get cleaned up and be available for the next program coming in.
Well, we had a caller who said that she has thought about inviting a homeless person to live with her and to help her clean and take care of the house. She's getting older, and that's much more difficult. And she says people respond with shock and tell her that she just can't do that. What's your reaction to that idea?
Well, number one, that's very, very generous, very helpful, and you know, I very much appreciate that. What I would say is, it's just like having any roommate under any circumstances. It's hard to find people who you are compatible with living with. Mm-hmm. So just be real careful in making sure that it's somebody that you're going to be able to get along with. But it doesn't matter if they're homeless or not homeless. That's just sort of across the board advice to people. Like, you know, people don't always like living together, and you know. So that you know, but I think it is very generous, and those types of situations can work out perfectly well. I know several people who have done things like that. Some of them work out, some of them don't. But I don't think that, you know, there's any reason to be shocked by it. You know, it could be a solution for two people at once.
Yeah. So, how else might Janine or anybody else, as individuals, what can we do to help?
Well, definitely. You know, paying attention to those grassroots organizations that are out there who are making sure that people who are sleeping on the street because they're saving their days are warm at night. You know, donating blankets, donating money, donating time. I would highly recommend that, you know, volunteer to go down to see the State Street family on a Saturday at 3 o'clock and meet people, talk to them, find out what's going on in their lives. And find out, you know, what circumstances people are facing, because it's a real eye-opener. And then also, you know, always donating to the organizations. The nonprofits out there doing this work, as much grief as I often give them, they're working on shoestring budgets. They're not able to pay their staff what they're really worth, or not able to hire staff who have more training. And so, you know, I think that the nonprofits that are doing the work in this area are doing the best they can, but always need more support. And, you know, get involved in something like the Tiny House Village. We always need volunteers down there. You can actually volunteer to come help build the tiny houses, or to build things for our workshop, so that we can sell goods during the holidays, so that we can raise money for building more houses.
Yeah, I saw something, I think it was on a social media site, that said that someone recommended putting together a little care package of, you know, I don't know, toiletry items and non-perishable snack foods and things like that, and to give them to people that we believe might be homeless.
Yeah, and throw a bus pass in there, too. In Madison, it's so hard to get bus passes. But, yeah, toiletries, I think, like, people can go get food on their food stamps, or there's programs that feed people. But yeah, getting some soap or some shampoo or a razor, socks are always in high demand. Hats and gloves, and blankets are all things that people need. That at the city county building, if they throw out all the blankets up there, then people need more blankets. Or it's just even just some hot cocoa or something that you can throw, put a mug in a microwave and get something warm would be very much appreciated.
Well, we have just a minute to go. What is your Thanksgiving week wish when it comes to this issue?
Well, for me, the Housing First programs, if we could get everyone into Housing First and then deal with people wherever they're at, I think that would be probably the best thing we could do in our community, and it's doable. The numbers aren't that overwhelming, and we could just get people into housing, make sure they're not out on the street, not freezing, not sick.
Are you optimistic that we can really make a dent in this issue?
I think with HUD's new priorities, with the mayor here in Madison pledging $20 million and the county pledging another $8 million, we're moving forward in the right direction. It's going to be years before we solve the problem, but I do feel like we are finally looking at new ways of doing some of things instead of being stuck in the 80s. And I feel like there's a lot of grassroots organizations that are making a difference, opening people's eyes up to the issue of homelessness and really caring for people who they meet on the street. And I think that makes a complete difference once you know someone who's homeless and once you understand the circumstances they're in.
Thank you, Brenda, for being with us.
Sure.
Brenda Conkle, Executive Director of the Tenant Resource Center in Madison. I'm Joy Curdine. This is the Ideas Network.